We're up to Rav Ashi. Now, again, this is the middle of a very, very complicated sugya. Essentially, one second, we're trying to answer two statements in a braisa. A braisa made two statements about an egg. Statement one is, if the egg is mixed in with 1,000 other eggs, it is not nullified in a majority, and you can't eat any of them. And statement number two says, any doubt about the egg, you have to resolve in a strict way. Now, the Gemara says these two laws are actually in contradiction, because here's the following. There are two possible cases we might be talking about. One is the egg that is laid on Shabbos or Yom Tov, and the other is the egg that is laid from a treifa. Now, here is the issue. Let's take each one separately. The egg that is laid from a treifa, if you don't know if this egg is from a treifa or not, you have to be strict, because safek del raisa l'chumra. So that fits that law. On the other hand, if an egg that's born from a treifa gets mixed up with other eggs, it's going to be nullified in a majority. So that doesn't fit the rule that it's not bottle. Now, let's take the opposite. If, on the other hand, we are talking about an egg that is laid on Yom Tov, which is Muktzah, we understand why if it gets mixed up with 1,000 eggs, they're forbidden, because that's the general rule of Davar Sheyesh Lamatirin, any prohibition that will eventually become permitted, Muktzah is permitted after Shabbos, does not get nullified. But I don't understand why, if I don't know if this was born on Shabbos, it would be forbidden, because it's only an Isser D'Rabbanan and Suffolk D'Rabbanan L'Kula. So the problem here is we have these two statements, and each statement is correct with respect to one of the cases, but it is incorrect with respect to the other. Right? That was our problem. So what Rav Ashi is going to give us is the simplest answer to the problem. And Rav Ashi, this is Dalet Amud Aleph, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 lines from the top. And his answer is going to break the logjam by essentially teaching me that Davor Sheyesh Lamatirin, an Isser that will eventually become permitted, has two separate consequences. Not only is it not Batel in a majority, but we also are machmir in the case of a suffek, even though it's a suffek drabbanan. So now everything is fine. The two consequences, what are the two consequences? That if you're in doubt, you have to be strict. And the other consequence is, if the egg gets mixed up with other eggs, they're all forbidden. The two consequences pertain to the same situation, the egg that is hatched, I'm sorry, the egg that is laid on Shabbos or Yom Tov. It's a davar sheyesh lo matirin, and davar sheyesh lo matirin, I do not apply the rule of safek d'rabbanan l'kula, I got to be strict, and I also don't apply the rule of bitul berov. Okay, that's Rav Ashi's answer. Rav Ashi Yomar, li'olam, safek yom tov, safek chol, if you have an egg and you're not sure if it was laid on yom tov or chol, that is called a davar sheyesh lo matirin. That is an iser that will eventually become mutter, because even if it was born on Yom Tov, it'll be permitted after Yom Tov. The chol davar sheyesh lo matirin afilu bidrabana, even if it is a rabbinic prohibition, lo batel, it is not nullified. Rashi says, just generally speaking, Rashi says, the reason davar sheyesh lo matirin is not batel, again, what's the operative rule here? Normally, if you have something treif, actually, let me give you a little background here, because I really glossed over this a little bit. There are really, an egg that gets mixed up in other eggs, a piece of treif meat that gets mixed up with other pieces of meat, if you think about this for a moment, is actually a bit of a different type of problem than when some milk falls into a meat soup. I hope you can see that. It's a different type of mixture. And halacha describes one mixture as lach belach, liquids mixing with liquids. And the other is yavesh biyavesh, dry substances mixing with dry substances. Now the difference is the following. When you have, let's say, milk falling into a meat soup, you can't really say, oh, I can eat this because the milk didn't get here. In liquids, there is diffusion. Everything mixes. Every single spoonful is going to have a little milk in it. So there, the issue is that there needs to be enough heter, or enough meat, so that the taste of the milk is imperceptible. And something that, once it cannot be tasted, it is considered to be nullified, destroyed, non-existent. Now normally that means, although there are exceptions, normally that's Chazal or Meshayer, that is the ratio of 60. So if milk falls into a meat soup, and you have a volume of meat or meat soup that is 60 times or more the amount of milk that fell in, that is considered to be nullification because the taste is no longer perceptible. Now, if you think about that, that really does not make sense when you're dealing with, let's say, one egg, not an egg yolk, one egg in its shell gets mixed in to 100 other eggs. Now, if I take an egg and I eat it, if I'm eating the wrong one, I'm definitely tasting it. In other words, you can't make the argument the taste has become imperceptible. That would be true if I took all the eggs and I made omelets out of them. So you might say, you know, the taste of this egg has become diffused. But if I'm taking each egg separately and eating it, if I'm eating the wrong one, I'm tasting it. So that's
like
really
a sandwich in a bunch of 60.
That's right.
Right.
So that's very different. That type of nullification is not based on annulment of taste. That type of nullification is based on probability. That the Torah says that if a minority component is intermingled with a majority, you are allowed to assume whatever you take comes from the majority component rather than the minority. Now, because of that, on a Torah level, shishim is not relevant. Under a Torah law, when you have mixtures of yavesh biyavesh, all you need is a little bit more heter than iser. In other words, let's take the egg of a treifa. If the egg of a treifa gets mixed in with other eggs, so it's not a davar sheyesh lo matirin, right? The egg of a treifa gets mixed in. All you need is two kosher mixed with one treif, and you will be allowed to eat the egg. Now, there is a machlokas rishayim. Can you eat all three eggs? Because there you got a problem. So some say, well, yes, I can't eat all three eggs at the same time, because then for sure I'm doing an aveira. But I eat egg one, because I'm entitled to assume it came from the majority group of two. And then I can eat egg two, because I can assume it came from the majority group of two. And I can eat egg three, because it's, now even though, and again, there are different machlokim. Some say, well, three people can eat the three eggs, but you can't have one person eat all three.
Why are we allowed to do that when it's an issue to the right thing?
Yep.
You have to be machmir with that.
Well, you have to be machmir, but there is a principle of rov. Acharei rabim lahatos. And rov is no longer suffix. Rov is a rule that says you assume it comes from the heter. So I just wanted to point out that in the case of the egg getting mixed in with other eggs, 60 is not the operative betel rule. It is rather a simple majority. Now, when, however, the iser in question is a davar sheyesh lo matirin, such as muktzah, which is permitted after Shabbos, then there is no rule of betel at all. Okay, there is no rule of betel at all, and you have to be strict.
That's a very strict. You understand the sense of probability, the chance of probability from one in a thousand to zero in a thousand, legislating an extra debt.
That's correct. And then that's exactly what Rashi says. Rashi says, Rashi's language is, why should you eat something that might possibly be prohibited if by waiting you will eat something that is definitely not prohibited? See, that's why, actually, again, I want to say that if you actually had, let's imagine this. Let's imagine a lach balach mixture. Let's imagine that you had this muktzah egg that was broken and mixed with the yolks of other eggs so that you had 60 times the mixture. Now, some want to say that would be mutter, even though it's a devastational material, because there, the taste of the prohibited substance is annulled, and it's no longer a rule of probability, it's a rule of halachic non-existence. And for that, even a devastational material might work. But here, where the question is, can I take each egg separately and eat it, you're only dealing with probabilistic assumptions, and devastational material says you must minimize your probability of Aveira by waiting till after Shabbat, right? So you have to be sensitive that the concept of nullification by Rove has two fundamentally different meanings when you're dealing with mixtures of liquids versus separate items that are in a mixture. Okay. All right. Now let's see a little further. Tanya. We learned in a brisa, Acherim Omrim Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. There are others who say, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. Now this is actually what we are told elsewhere in the Gemara, that whenever it mentions Acherim, it is always a reference to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Nassan. Of course, Rabbi Meir is mentioned quite a few times, but sometimes he's called Acherim. Some say he's called Acherim. I don't know why Rabbi Nassim will be another reason, but Rabbi Meir is called Acher because Rabbi Meir was a disciple of Elisha ben Abuya, Acher, who was called Acher. And this is kind of a disparaging remark. However, if you want to disparage Rabbi Meir by hinting at his affiliation with Acher, it's not at all clear why only sometimes we call him Acher, and other times we say Rabbi Meir. The Gemara in Harius actually gives another story. The Gemara in Harius, I don't even remember all the details, but it gives a whole story how Rabbi Meir once tried to discredit Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who was the Nasi. He tried to slug him up and prove him wrong. And of course, Rabban Shimon Gamliel's son was Rav Yehuda HaNasi. And from that time on, any teaching that Rabbi Meir said after that incident was always recorded as Acherim. So anything he said before the incident, he is given credit. But Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Nassim were both involved in discrediting or embarrassing Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, so therefore they were given this somewhat of
Lashon Hara.
Which one? What Rabbi Meir did, or what they're doing to Rabbi Meir?
I guess what they're doing to Rabbi Meir.
Well, they felt that Rabbi Meir humiliated a Talmud Chacham, and therefore there's a certain punishment that he gets for that. Now, they said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, Beya Tochal Hi V'ima, that unlike Beis Hillel that says the egg that is laid on Yom Tov cannot be eaten, they say the egg can be eaten along with the mother. You can shech the chicken and you can eat the egg. So the Gemara wants to know, as we've always discussed, this statement, what type of chicken are we talking about? The Mayaskinan, what type of hen is Rabbi Eliezer talking about? Ilema bitarnagolis ha'omedes liachila. If we are dealing with a chicken which was set aside to be eaten, so the chicken is not muktzah at all, like you're allowed to shech dan yamtif. So pshita, it's obvious. Hi v'ima sharia. You can eat the egg and eat the chicken. Because, once again, if the chicken is not mukta, if the chicken had a designated use before Yom Tov, and the egg is part of that chicken, even if the egg was laid on Yom Tov, It is simply part of the chicken that disattached itself. Right, and it would be permitted. Ella, the girsa must be Tarnagoles Haomedes Legadel Bayim. So if we are talking about a hen that was not intended to be eaten, it was a hen that was set aside for egg laying, then fakert, you shouldn't say you're allowed to shech the mother and eat the egg. The mother is muktzah because when Shabbos began, it was removed from intent to use. And the egg should be permitted because it's a newly created entity, because it was part of that chicken when Shabbos began. So, mimanafshach, what does Rabbi Eliezer mean when he says you can shech the mother and eat the egg? If it's tarnagolos omedes liachila, that's obvious. If it's tarnagolos omedes legadol bayim, it should be forbidden. Right, so what is it going on? So the Gemara says, the Gemara offers Rabbi Zeira's explanation of this. Amar Rabbi Zeira. So Rabbi Zeira said, 1 second. Teichal, you may eat the egg, agav ima, by being able to eat the mother. So what is that talking about? But still, we still have a problem. I mean, how can you eat the mother if the mother was set aside for egg laying? Hechi dami, but what is the case? Amar Abaye, kigon shelakcha stam. So, all right, this is a difficult situation to understand exactly. Lakcha stam means a person bought a chicken erev yomtiv and did not clearly indicate by his behavior if he intended to keep it for shechita or if he intended to use it for egg laying. See, apparently, the notion, I mean, he may have had something in his subjective mind, but the definition of what becomes dedicated for one or the other is a function of his declaration or a function of his behavior. Let's say, for example, you put the chickens you want to shecht, you put them in one part of the barn, and the chickens that are for egg laying are in another part of the chicken coop, and here he didn't put it in either place. So the rule here is the following. Since it was not clear what his intention is, whatever he decides to do with it becomes what its designation is. Therefore, can he shecht it? Yes, because we say if he takes it to shecht, we assume that that's what he really wanted to do with it all along. But that's going to have implications for the egg, because here is the idea. If such a hen lays an egg, the permissibility of the egg hinges on what he decides to do with the mother. If he decides to leave the mother alive for egg laying, then this is an egg that was born from an egg laying chicken, and it's forbidden. If he decides to shech the mother, then the egg is born from a chicken that was set aside for shechita, and it would be mutter. So the chiddush of Rabbi Eliezer is not if the chicken was clearly designated for eating, you can shecht it. That's obvious. His chiddush is when there's an indeterminate designation, what you do with the mother will dictate what you can do with the egg.
And prior designation will have any impact. If you bought this from Fred's prior, of course, the Bob's good egg, and it wouldn't matter.
Well, I think that would. If you did something in which it would normally be assumed that it's for shechita, I think we would assume that. That wouldn't be stam. Stam is that it cannot be inferred from your behavior why you did this.
Stam doesn't render the chicken muksa.
Apparently stam does not render it muksa because...
Before
the question is, how does stam... Right, in other words, why shouldn't stam be muksa since it wasn't designated? Yeah. Yeah, it's not clear why stuff. Well, yeah. Well, again, we don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. Let me remind you. But it could be that Rabbi Eliezer says that everything is usable unless it's designated not to be used. In other words, instead of saying things are permissible only if they're designated for use, which is exactly the way we paskin, actually, his position is things are potentially usable unless there is a contrary negative designation.
We right. didn't designate it either way, so it's not mukta.
Well, that's on the other hand, you could argue that everything is mukta unless it's designated for use.
No, but he didn't make up his mind.
That's right.
It's going to be, so it's not mukta.
Well, it depends how you define the concept. If the concept is everything is mukta unless it was designated for a permissible use, that would indicate, if he didn't make up his mind, that alone would make it mukta. Now you see, you're correct, you see that Rabbi Eliezer does not define it that way. Rabbi Eliezer apparently says it's mukta only if you designate it not to be used.
Right.
Therefore, if you decide on Shabbos, or Yom Tov, to use it for egg laying, which is taking it out of direct use, then the egg will be mukta. If you decide to use it for shechita, you're putting it into use, then the egg would not be mukta. This is the meaning of Rabbi Eliezer's statement. Lakhastam, Abaya says, nishchata, if you decide to shecht it, huvrara, you have clarified d'liachila omedes, that you are designating it for eating, and therefore the egg is permitted. Lo nishchata, if you decide not to shecht it, huvrara, you have clarified d'lagadel beyim omedes, that it is for the purpose of egg laying, and the egg will be mukta. Okay, that's one answer. Now, Rav Mari gives another answer. In other words, what is Rabbi Eliezer's statement? And that is, guzma katani. It is really an exaggerated term. In other words, like this. Rav Mari is learning that Rabbi Eliezer is talking about a hen that was designated for shechita. So the question is, well, if the hen was designated for shechita, even if there's a chiddush that the egg is not called nolad, there is a chiddush you can eat the egg, but there's no chiddush you can shecht the mother. So the question is, why bother mentioning the mother, just say the egg? The answer is, guzma means an exaggerated, meaning an excessive language of emphasis, as if to say, not only can you eat the mother, you can even eat the egg. But ein achinami, eating the mother is actually obvious. It is only eating the egg that's a little chiddush, that I don't treat it like a newly created entity, I treat it like a separated food from the mother. It's a lashon of guzma, and his answer is, it's a tarnagolas omedes liachila, or disanya, and he quotes another braisa of the Acherim that supports his interpretation. Acherim omrim, mishum Rabbi Eliezer, beya teyachel, hi v'ima, you can eat the egg and the mother, v'yefroach uklipaso, and you can eat the chicken that is hatched. In other words, he's going further. I can eat the mother, I can eat the egg, I can eat the chick that is hatched from the egg, uklipaso, and I can eat the shell. Now, this is just proving that the language is just extra emphatic language, because obviously you're not going to eat the shell. It's not edible, right? So therefore,
calcium content.
That's true. On the other hand, I don't know if the body digests it, but
how often you eat the chicken that was just going off, because it's not much stronger
than meat. Right. So the answer is, he's just throwing in this language just to make his point in an emphatic way. My klipa, so what does klipa mean? Ilema klipa mamish? The shell? Klipa bas achilehi? Can a klipa be eaten? Ella, it means efroach biklipa, so it means you can eat the little chick as it's coming out of its shell. You could pick up the shell and, you know, eat the chick. Well, of course, you'd have to shecht it. It's not so pleasant. You can't just pick it up and eat it alive. But there would have to be a shechita. Okay. Now, the Gemara now is going to discuss the following.
I thought, you know, if you eat a cow that comes, you know, I think if you shecht a mother and the cow, you don't have to.
No, that might be true, but remember, we're talking about the egg was laid while the chicken was alive, and then you shecht the mother. In other words, we're not talking about I shecht the chicken and I find eggs in it.
Oh, okay.
If I shecht
the egg's outside.
Yeah, the egg is outside already. So of course, when the egg is outside, shechting the mother is not going to be shechita of the efroach. Right. Right. Like,
well, you guys supposed to be posing a kasha to Rav Ashi?
They're not posing a kasha to Rav Ashi. They're just giving another answer. In other words, Rabbi Eliezer said, the egg can be eaten, both it and the mother. And we had a Rav Ashi before? No, this is a totally new thing. Nothing to do with Rav Ashi. That's the end of that sugya, and Tanya's a new sugya here.
So we're happy with Rav Ashi.
In fact, we paskin like Rav Ashi, that the principle of Devar Sheyesh L'Matirin does not only apply to nullification, but it also applies to Safek Drabanan L'Kula. In other words, we go the Chumrah by Safek Drabanan by a davar sheyesh la yesh la matirin. One second here. Yeah, that's right. So therefore, when Rabbi Eliezer says you can eat efroach ukli paso, he means efroach bikli paso. One second. But I think it means a little different than it. One second. Rashi's learning here. Yeah, turn a little bit. I just want to show you something. Look ahead at Vav Amid Beis. I just want to show you a little passage of the Gemara.
Oh,
yeah, that's one way to cover ground. This is in the middle of the page. One second. See where it says Tanu Rabbanan right in the middle of the page. Tanu Rabbanan Efroach Shenolad B'Yamtov. See those words? Tanu Rabbanan Efroach Shenolad B'Yamtov. This is a chick. So we discussed if the egg is hatched on Yamtov, but what if the egg, I'm sorry, if the egg is laid on Yamtov, what if the egg is hatched, even if it was laid before Yamtov? If the egg is hatched on Yamtov, the Tanakhama says, Asur, you're not allowed to shecht the chick. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Af Bechol Aser. You're not allowed to shecht a newly hatched chick, even during the week, Lefi Shelo Nispatchu Einav, because its eyes are no longer fully open. And actually, that's a general halach of kashrut that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, a newly born animal that has not yet opened its eyes is just treated like a sheret. It's treated like a crawling worm or a crawling creature, and therefore it's considered
sheret
to be.
Sheret, you mean in a couple of timber?
No, it's not one of the eitzrot. There are only eitzrot that are metame. And it's not tame. First of all, even a sheret is only metame if it's dead. A live sheret is not. That's a separate machlokas. In other words, so that's the machlokas. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, according to the Tanakhama, it is forbidden to eat on Yom Tov. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, it is forbidden to eat even b'chol. Okay, we'll get to that Gemara when we get to it. Now, let's go back. The Gemara here refers to that machlokas. And that is, the Gemara wants to know, what is the phrase, I mistranslated something. What is the phrase, Efroach and its shell? If it means I could eat both the chick and the shell, that doesn't make sense because a shell is inedible. So maybe it means I could eat the Efroach even if it is in the egg, meaning I could bite into the egg and eat the Efroach. That you can't do. Because even the Rabbanan who argue with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and they permit the eating of an Ephroach, that's only after it leaves the egg. But while it's in the egg, you cannot eat the Ephroach. So you can't say it means I can bite into the Ephroach while it's in the egg. Nobody will allow that. Ad kan lay pligi Rabbanan olay de Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Right? That's that machlokas. When do the Rabbanan permit the eating of an Ephroach, unlike Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov? Hecha diyatzel yaver ha'olam, that's only when the chick has hatched out of the egg. Avo hecha delo yatzel yaver ha'olam, but where it has not yet emerged, it's in the egg itself. Lo pliki. See, let me just explain. This is actually the problem. This is the problem with blood spots in eggs. This is exactly the problem. You know, when you have free-range chickens, you know, organic eggs, whatever it is, if the chickens are free-range, and you find a blood spot in an egg, you cannot just remove the blood spot. See, because the reason is, it's not just a problem of blood. If that indicates the possibility of a fertilized egg, it's an ephroach. An ephroach cannot be eaten until it has emerged from the egg. Otherwise, it has a din of a sheretz. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, even after it emerged, you couldn't shecht it until its eyes open. So people have to understand, the only reason why with eggs I can remove blood spots is because typically hens are kept away from roosters, and therefore our eggs are not fertilized eggs. So the blood comes from whatever it is, a speck from the hen or whatever it is. It comes from her ovaries or the like, so that's simply a spot of blood. So you remove a spot of blood, it's okay. But when you have a fertilized egg, the entire egg is forbidden because it's a din of an ephroach, or at least a chashash of a fertilized egg. So the Gemara is asking,
you're not eating a treif animal.
So you're eating a treif animal. That's correct. So people have to be careful. And I understand anyway, precisely because of fertilization, that blood spots are much more prevalent in free-roaming chickens. But one also has to know that the entire egg has to be discarded. And you would need shishim. If you cooked it, you'd have to have 60, not keneged the blood spots, you'd have to have 60 keneged the eggs that have those blood spots. As opposed to an unfertilized egg, you know, you only need... Actually, we're actually mako, but even if you're mach, we only need 60 keneged the blood spots. You would not need 60 keneged the whole egg. So the Gemara wants to know, what is the phrase ephroach in its shell? It can't mean you'll eat the shell, and it can't mean you'll eat the ephroach by chewing through the egg, because everybody says until the ephroach is born, it is forbidden. So the answer has to be, this is the Gemara's conclusion, Ella. Ephroach uklipaso guzman. In other words, it's referring to a born chick, and eating the shell is just an emphatic way. So you can eat the born chick, and you can eat the shell. Hachanan? Well, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov would say only when its eyes are open, and the Chachamim would say even if the eyes are not open.
Yeah.
That's that machlokas. And therefore, you see that this brisa uses guzma language. Hachanami. Here too, when it says you can eat the chicken and the egg, even though eating the mother is superfluous because it's a tarnagailas for achila, but it's a lashon of guzma. Okay. All right. So now, that's the end of that sugya. That was a little sugya. Now we come to a very, very important sugya, which will lead us into, we alluded to it a little bit, it'll lead us into a fundamental discussion of Rosh Hashanah. So we're still in the month of Tishrei. It starts off this way, Itmar, Shabbos v'Yom Tov. Let's say you have a Shabbos which is followed by a Yom Tov. I mean, this year is an example. But of course, keep in mind, we're not really talking about two-day Yom Tov. So let's assume that Yom Tov is Sunday. You have Shabbos and one day of Yom Tov on Sunday. So the question becomes, we paskin like Beis Hillel, not like Rabbi Eliezer, we paskin like Beis Hillel. If the egg is laid on Shabbos or Yom Tov, it's muktzah. So what if it's laid on Shabbos? Can I eat it on Yom Tov? Or if it's laid on Yom Tov, can I eat it on Shabbos? Right? In other words, does it carry over to the next sacred day? So Rav Amar, Rav is very strict. Rav says, Nolda Bazeh, if it's born on Shabbos, Asura Bazeh, you're not allowed to eat it on Yom Tov. We treat Shabbos and Yom Tov, even though there's a Havdalah between them, Shabbos and Yom Tov, but we treat it like one long Kedusha, and therefore anything that was prohibited on Shabbos will carry over to Yom Tov and vice versa. Rav Yochanan Amar, Nolda Bazeh, Muteris Bazeh. Right? Born on Shabbos, it's Asur on Shabbos, it's Mutar on Yom Tov, born on Yom Tov, Mutar on Yom Tov, Asur on Yom Tov, Mutar on Shabbos. So the Gemara wants to ask Akasha and Rav the following way. Neima Kesava Rav, shall we say that Rav's Svara is Kedusha Achasi? In other words, Rav's general rule is that when you have a Shabbos and a Yom Tov contiguous to each other, you treat it as one long sanctified period. Yom Arichta, a long day. Not only Rosh Hashanah, he's talking about Shabbos and Yom Tov. Now, one long sanctity does not, of course, mean the halachos are going to be the same. Obviously, Rav is not saying there's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. But what he's saying is, because it is continuously kadosh, so anything that was muktzu, was not in a state of readiness for that day, is treated as not being in a state of readiness for the next day as well, and therefore it is forbidden. But the Gemara says, if that's what Rav's position is, this contradicts another statement of Rav. And the other statement of Rav is, the Ha'amar Rav, Halacha Ke'arba Zekenin, the Halacha follows the four elders. He doesn't mention who the four elders are here. The Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer, which is Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Again, not the Rabbi Eliezer we quoted before, but the Omer Shtei Kedushas Hain. Rav himself said, we pass him like Rabbi Eliezer, that says Shtei Kedushas. Again, what is the term Shtei Kedushas? When you have a Shabbos and a Yom Tov, we look at them as two separate time periods. Therefore, even though the egg was laid on Shabbos, Legabe Yom Tov, the egg was laid Erev Yom Tov. Now, an egg that is laid Erev Yom Tov is Mutar on Yom Tov. The fact that Erev Yom Tov happened to be Shabbos makes no difference. So it's a contradiction. How can Rav say if it's born on Yom, on one day it's forbidden the other day, if Rav Paskins, each Kedusha is given a separate status? So the Gemara wants to say, maybe we could offer the following explanation. Elohacha Bahachona Diraba Kamiflagi Rav Islay Hachona Diraba Rav Yechanan Leslay Hachona Diraba. So what does Rashi say here? One second. Ah, so let me explain the arguments here. If you remember, one of the reasons why we gave, going back all the way to the Mishnah, why is an egg forbidden when it's born on Shabbos? When it's laid on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So one of the reasons we gave was a principle that Rabba derived, that Rabba said any egg that is laid today was actually finished in its development the day before. And the real problem is not on a regular Shabbos or a regular Yom Tov. The real problem is when it's a Yom Tov after Shabbos or a Shabbos after Yom Tov. Because if it's laid, let's say it's a Shabbos after, or Yom Tov after Shabbos. If it's laid on Yom Tov, when was it finished? It was finished on Shabbos. And you can never have Shabbos prepare for Yom Tov. Now, here is what the Gemara is suggesting. If you're telling me that when an egg is laid on Yom Tov, the mere fact that it was completed in the chicken the day before is enough to be treated as Shabbos preparing for Yom Tov, then think about it. If it was laid the day before, that is even a greater magnitude of preparation for Yom Tov. In other words, like this. If you had a Shabbos and a Yom Tov, Shabbos and Yom Tov is Sunday, and the egg is laid on Yom Tov. Just laid on Yom Tov. According to Rava's reasoning, the reason the egg is usher is because Shabbos prepared that egg to be laid on Yom Tov, and you're not allowed to benefit from something that Shabbos has done to prepare its use for Yom Tov. Now, that's true even if it was laid on Yom Tov. Now, the Gemara is suggesting that if Rav follows Rava's explanation, then in a way it's a kal v'chomer if an egg was laid on Shabbos, you can't use it on Yom Tov, right? Because Shabbos would be preparing that egg for Yom Tov. How is it preparing it? By laying the egg. Laying the egg is even a greater hachana than the egg just being finished in the chicken's body. And therefore the concept is this, that if Rav understands the din of the Mishnah to be premised on Rabbah, and remember Rabbah's whole point was that the Isser of Shabbos preparing for Yom Tov is even preparation that God does. In other words, it's not my preparing it, but even Hachana Bidei Shemayim. Therefore, here's what the Gemara wants to say. Rav Yochanan does not understand the law of the Mishnah based on Rabbah. Rav Yochanan will just say, it's nolad, it's muktzah. The egg was not in a state of readiness. And since Shabbos and Yom Tov are two distinct holidays, so even if it wasn't in a state of readiness on Shabbos, it was in a state of readiness for Yom Tov. That's why I can eat it. But Rav learns the Mishnah like Rabbah, and therefore you can't have the egg because Shabbos is preparing for Yom Tov.
That would mean if the leg is, an egg is laid on Yom Tov, then you can never eat it.
For Chol?
Yeah.
Oh, so Rashi addressed that question. Rashi actually said, Rashi gives a different answer. Rashi says that Shabbos cannot be Mechen for Yom Tov, and Yom Tov cannot be Mechen for Shabbos. But since a Sudas Chol is of no importance, so we don't really care what the source of the Sudas Chol is. So Rashi actually says, I can eat an egg that was laid on Yom Tov during the week, because we're not concerned about hachana problems there. That's correct. Of course, what it would indicate, I think, is, this is an interesting problem, if an egg was laid on Shabbos, could I eat it next Shabbos? See, that's an interesting question. If it would stamazai be because it's muktzah and nolad, that would only apply to this Shabbos. There'd be no problem in next Shabbos when it's already in a state of readiness. But if it's Hachana Derabba, you're still using, you know, Shabbos to prepare. So that's an interesting. That would have a carryover, which means if you refrigerated it or something, you would not be allowed to eat it next Yom Tov. It would be permanently barred from Yom Tov use because it was something that was prepared on Shabbos. That I think would be true. So this is the Gemara's explanation for Rav, that Rav holds of Rabba's principle of Hachana, but Rav Yochanan less lay Hachana Drav. So the Gemara says this is a good explanation. Now, this starts off, we'll just read a few more lines, this starts off as a machlokas Rav and Rav Yochanan. Again, Nolda Bazeh, if it hatched, not hatched, Nolda here means if it was laid. If it was laid on Shabbos, is it Mutter on Yom Tov? If it was laid on Yom Tov, is it Mutter on Shabbos? But the Gemara now says that the Machlokes Rav and Rav Yochanan is in fact an argument among Tanoim. It goes back to an earlier source, Kitanoi. This is a Machlokes Tanoim, nailed up Shabbos. If the egg was laid on Shabbos, Taichal b'Yom Tov, you can eat it on Yom Tov. This is exactly like Rav Yochanan. B'Yom Tov, it was born on Yom Tov, Taichal b'Shabbos. In other words, the Tanna Kamma says like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Adayin hi machlokas. In other words, obviously, Beis Shammai is going to permit everything. But in other words, Beis Hillel will still say it's forbidden, meaning you'll still have the argument between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai Omrim Tiachal, which he always says, Beis Hillel Omrim Lo Asoichal. Okay, let's just read a few more lines. Alright, so we've shown that the Machlokes Rav and Rav Yochanan is a machlokas the Tanakama and Rebbe Yehuda. Now, the Gemara gives us a story. Ushpezichne to Rav Ada Bar Ava. Now, Ushpezichne means the innkeeper. It's the same word as Ushpizen. The word Ushpizen is a very familiar word to the general public because of the movie Ushpizen. See, it's a kosher movie, very good. So it says the innkeeper, the host of Rav Ada Bar Ava, Havi Lehanech Beim, had eggs, Mi Yom Tov L'Shabbos, that were laid on Yom Tov, and he was going to offer them for consumption on Shabbos. First question is, how did he cook them? I mean, maybe they eat raw eggs, I don't know, but okay. Oso L'Kameh, he went in front of, well, actually, the Gemara will explain. He went in front of Rav Ada Bar Ava and he asked the Shaila, Omar Le, my liatavinu ha'idna, can I roast them now, v'nachlinu l'machor, and eat them tomorrow? So that's his question. Meaning that I cannot eat the eggs today because they were born on Yom Tov. But maybe I can cook them for now. Of course, now this is assuming peripheral question. He must have made an Erev Tafshilin, because normally you're not allowed to cook on Yom Tov Teshuvah. Let's assume that he made whatever you need to do. Yeah. Of course, the thing I don't understand is, I don't understand this. If you can't eat the egg on Yom Tov, you can't move the egg on Yom Tov, because the egg then becomes Muktzah. I mean, even though Beit Hillel only says in the Mishnah, you cannot eat the egg, but L'chari, you cannot move the egg either. So I don't really understand the basis of his saying, I can't eat the egg today, but can I... Unless maybe you don't have to move it. I don't know. Maybe I'll bring the fire to it. Yeah. Does anyone have a note in that? Do you have a... Because I just don't see the heter. Because the innkeeper understands that you're not allowed to eat the egg today. So I'm not sure how we could raise the question that I could cook it.
But I mean, there's a comfort. You can move milk in certain circumstances. I mean, if these eggs are just sitting out or someone would step on them and lose them, you can move them out of the way, right?
Well, actually, okay, let me go back. Actually, the Gemara itself addresses what I said.
He's asking whether the milk prohibition included handling.
Right. That's exactly what he's asking. In other words, he's asking, can I cook them or broil them today to eat the next day? Oh, so listen to the AS. So the Gemara actually addresses our point. Omar Le, Rav Ada Bar Ava says, Ma datach, what is your thinking? Your thinking is obviously assuming that tomorrow you could eat it. Now, what's the basis of your thinking? Because of a general rule in halacha, which is a true rule. Rav v'Rav Yochanan, we have a general rule in halacha that when there's a machlokes between Rav and Rav Yochanan, halacha k'Rav Yochanan, which would therefore support your contention, you can eat the egg tomorrow. But here's the problem. Exactly our question. Our problem is, just because you can eat the egg tomorrow doesn't mean you can move it today. And this is what he says. Afilu Rabbi Yochanan lo kashari ela legoma lemach. If the egg was laid on Yom Tov, you're allowed to eat it on Shabbos, but you're going to have to eat it raw, because on Shabbos you can't cook it. Avol biyomei, on the day that it was laid, since you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to move it, and therefore there's nothing you can do with it. And then we bring a raya, for Hassanya, as we learned in a brisa, but this is a general rule of muktzah. Things you're not allowed to use, you're not allowed to move. You can touch, but you can't move. And the Taka says, Achatz Be'er Shenolda B'Shabbos, whether the egg was born on Shabbos, the Achatz Be'er Shenolda B'Yom Tov, or the egg was born on Yom Tov, Ein Metaltol Nosa, you're not allowed to move it, Lo L'Chasas Ba'as HaKli, you can't use it to cover a jar, V'lo lismach lo kari hamita. Okay, don't use it to even out the leg of a bed. Again, let's say a chair is uneven, etc. Now, then the Gemara has one other ma'isa. Ish pezichnei de Rav Papa. Right, so these were innkeepers that asked Shilas. The innkeeper or the landlord of Rav Papa, the Amri La Hu Gavra, Desl Kamidor, some say it was a person who came in front of Rav Papa, Havalu Hanichbeya Mishabas Layamtif. Now this was the reverse situation. The eggs were laid on Shabbos, and now it's Yom Tov. Yom Tov is Sunday. Now here, indeed, if you paskin like Rav Yochanan, so the eggs are not forbidden on Yom Tov, you'd be allowed to cook them. So we asked them on Shabbos, can I eat these eggs tomorrow? Amalei, so Rav Papa said to him, Zilo Idna, go away now. Tal l'machor. Ask me the question tomorrow. I don't want to answer the question today. Why is this? De Rav lo muki amora iluya. Rav would not have an interpreter. Again, this is a synonym phrase for giving a shir, because when a Rebbe would give a shir, he would have a meturgeman who would be his public address system. Rav would never give a shir. He would never have an amora. An amora is an interpreter. Miyama tava l'chavre. On one day of Yom Tov, to teach the halachos of the next day of Yom Tov, meaning once he had his Yom Tov meal, he would not teach halachos about the next day, and the reason is mishum shichras. Again, Rav was very strict. We know the halacha is if a person drinks a certain amount of wine, even if he's not drunk, he's not supposed to paskin unless the effects of the wine have dissipated by a half an hour nap or the like. That's why, by the way, there was a minhag among some rabbanim in Europe that they would not, there were two minhagim. One is they would not start their seder until several hours into the night when most people already did theirs. And the reason was, there were many, many chametz shilas that often came up in the days when the Shulchan Aruch has many cases about you find split grains and chickens. You think that the grains are chametz and the like. You know, our processing tends to avoid a lot of those questions. So the Rav didn't want to have David Kosos, or even one Kos. The Aruch HaShulchan, I think, had an opposite meaning, because you're not supposed to start the Seder late. Right. So what he did was, it is said, he would do a super fast Seder, and then take a half an hour nap. So by the time most people didn't even begin yet, or whatever, he was already finished that particular way, real fast Seder. So it says that once Rav had his Shabbos lunch, Rav would not teach halacha. So Rav Papa basically said, I had my Shabbos meal, I don't paskin halachas. Now that doesn't mean he didn't give a shir, maybe he can give a general shir, but he would not paskin shilas because he imbibed wine. So kiyasa l'machar, when the innkeeper came back the next day, which was Yom Tov, Omar, and he asked, can I eat these eggs today? Right, can I eat these eggs today? Omar lay, he said, Eichu Hashta Ishtaloi. V'amri lach, Rav Yochanan, Halacha k'Rav Yochanan. Well, what does Rashi say? If I paskined yesterday when I was drunk, I forgot what I said, but I would have, in other words, he actually doesn't remember. I don't remember what I said yesterday, if I said anything, but I would have told you that it's mutter, because Rav against Rav Yochanan, we paskin like Rav Yochanan. Okay. Right, maybe we'll stop here. We'll not go into this point. Okay. Have a good Yom Tov.
If I
share it, we can try. In the sukkah, I don't know. Let's see what the sukkah looks like.
No tree has the list of the just being there before.
Okay. Yeah, excuse me.
If a sheret falls in the soup, is also rov?
Well, if the sheret falls in the soup, it gives its taste into the soup, so you need 60.
Yeah,
6 shishas. Because it's a fly. Well, you need 60 also. Right, so the same thing. Right. Yeah.
If there's like a little letter, like that little hay, yeah, does that mean that's the halacha?
Yeah, well, usually that does mean that, because the hay takes you to the side here, which gives you a reference to the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. So
but they said the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan,
Well, we'll see. Well, we stopped in the middle. The Gemara's going to then discuss them since we passed them like that.
So we passed them like that. Yeah.
But we'll see. The Gemara will discuss.
So usually, when you see when you see these little letters, that means that's a halacha, right?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
That's good to know. Actually.
That's correct. but sometimes you have to check the halacha because the poskim may have had a different understanding than Rashi.
Yeah.
So even if it poskims like somebody, it may not be the way Rashi interprets
it. Who put these in?
Oh, that's a very important thing. This was put in by Rav Yehoshua Boaz, who lived in the 1500s. He did a lot of stuff. He put these things to the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch.
Wow.
And whenever Pesukim are mentioned, he gives you where the Pesuk is. For example, here, by Yikra, he put in these references. So he gives you these references and these references.
Well,
these references are someone else. These are other references.
Who is Rabbeinu Chananel?
Rabbeinu Chananel was a very early Rishon before Rashi, several generations before Rashi, who lived in North Africa. So he was, you could call him Sfarad, but it was really before there were really Sfarad and Ashkenazim.
Yeah.
And
what did he live like?
He lived in like the 900s.
Well,
and
before William the Conqueror.
Yeah. Well, even Rashi's before William the Conqueror, but no, the same overlap. Yeah. So Rabbeinu Chananel was one of the commentaries that Rashi himself consulted in his commentary.
Okay,
I'm really jumping, and I hope Baltimore is enjoyable for you.
Amen.
Okay.
Amen. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Blessing success.
What is the source of a good fiddle? Titkar Tara.
Yeah, we say that on Yom Kippur, HaKadosh Baruch Hu signs our judgment, but he keeps it with him until Hoshana Rabbah, when he delivers the command, the note to the angels. The Zohar. He delivers the note to the angels to carry out. So a Piska Tava, a good kvittel, is you pray that Hashem gives the angels a good note. That's why there's still time for that to be changed.
Is it limited to Motzei Yom Kippur?
Until Hoshana Rabbah.
Until Hoshana Rabbah.
Take care.
All right.
How are you?
Do you have time for a quick question?
Yes.